isn't really what the story is about. We can immerse ourselves in the details of a particular story. We can open ourselves up to the characters and the movements. Maybe we follow Act 1 to Act 2 in the course of a single reading that we have in church on a Sunday morning. And because of our context, whether it's time or geography or culture or whatever, but because of our context, we can miss what the story is really about. I think it would be easy for us to miss the point of the story that we have this week from Mark's gospel, especially if we've focused ourselves on the characters and their actions over the course of these 13 verses that we have. Jesus appears to be fleeing a crowd. His rising popularity gives him the need to get away and get some rest and relaxation. He tries to sneak away, and yet the people that Jesus has been teaching and healing follow him to his vacation spot. There he's approached by a woman whose daughter is ill. The story reads that she's possessed by a demon, so we know from the story that she has some psycho-spiritual affliction, and the woman is distraught, and she approaches Jesus because she's desperate for some healing for her child. Jesus refuses to do that at first, and the woman creates a winning argument, and then Jesus heals the child from afar. He dismisses the woman, assuring her that her child is healed, that she will find her child healed when she returns home, and indeed, that's exactly what happens. That's sort of act one of this story of 13 verses that we have for this morning. Act 2 narrates an encounter that Jesus has with a man who is unable to hear and has difficulty with his speech. A group of people bring Jesus to this man. It just says they. We don't know exactly who they are. Maybe disciples, maybe the loved ones of the man who is deaf and has this impeded speech. The story reads that Jesus takes this man away in private, away from those who brought them together, that Jesus puts his fingers in the man's ears, that he spits on his own hand and places it on the man's tongue, utters, "Be open," and the man hears again, and his speech is all of a sudden clear, unimpeded. Just as an aside, if you think that it's unbelievable that Jesus would put his fingers in a deaf man's ears and spit on his hand and put that hand in the mouth of this same man who's not able to speak, that he would do that and say, "Be opened," and that man could hear and speak. If you think it might be challenging to tell that story to a person in Jackson, Wyoming, on a beautiful fall morning, 2018, if you think that story is hard to believe, I would ask you to imagine someone from our context, Jackson, Wyoming, beautiful fall morning, 2018, someone from our context telling a story to one of Jesus's contemporaries, a story, let's say, about a man with heart disease, and that a person was going to cut the heart and lungs from a man who recently died, very recently, and that we might take the dead man's heart and lungs over to a table where the man with the diseased heart lies, and that we might take his diseased heart and his diseased lungs out of his chest and replace the heart and lungs of the recently died man, and that we would replace them by sewing them in there, doing what we do to make clothing. And then to get everything working again, just because that's, you know, not maybe everything's not working right. In order to get everything working again, we would use electricity, that stuff from lightning. I suppose The one from Jesus's constituency might really struggle to believe the story that we tell would be true. Miracles happen all around us every day in some form or another, and some are unbelievable, and some have become normative to us, but nevertheless, they are around. But I digress, which I have a habit of doing. When we tell these stories to each other in the context of our faith community, we tend to retell these stories as miracle stories. That's how we describe them. Our focus is on the mysterious or the miraculous, or for some literally unbelievable occurrence or healing or restoration of these characters with whom Jesus interacts. And we walk away either in disbelief or some state of belief that, you know, perhaps this might happen from time to time, but it would surely never happen to us or someone we love. Rather, what we're looking for is medical intervention. Maybe we call those miracles of our own age. If we were to walk away with that particular take on this interaction, I believe you could look at these particular 13 verses from Mark's gospel and just conclude, it's another one of those miracle stories, two of them. I recognize those. There are many in the gospels, and these two are remarkable stories within the course of these 13 verses, but they're just more miracles. I don't think that's what the stories are about, though. I think sometimes we get these passages from the Bible where the stories aren't about what the stories are about. Our study of these ancient wisdom texts requires us to stop and slow down and listen carefully for details. Maybe details in places where we don't normally pay attention. Let's look at it again. So the story narrates Jesus' interaction with a woman whose daughter is afflicted by some sort of psycho-spiritual ailment. And when we look at the top of the story, we see that the story says, from there he set out and went to the region of Tyre. It says, now the woman was a Gentile of Syro-Phoenician origin. Jesus is operating here outside the supposed, expected, previously agreed upon boundaries of operation. He's pushing outward the boundaries of the land of milk and honey, the promised land, the Holy Land. And he's working with people who aren't his own. He even acknowledges it. And then in the transition to Act 2, it details Jesus' movement away from the region of Tyre, where he interacted with the Syrophoenician woman, to neighboring Sidon. Still not in the right zip code for Jesus' people. Not way out, but out nonetheless. We pay attention to those particular details, and we're forced to ask ourselves, maybe this just isn't just another miracle story. Maybe there's something more happening. What's the evangelist Mark trying to communicate to us here in retelling these particular details in this particular story? I believe this story is about limits, about boundaries, about barriers. Those things we've manufactured, perhaps to keep our lives more manageable. I think the story challenges our lines in the sand, the walls that we've built or intend to build, the boundaries we've purposed around our power to express love logistically and practically and effectively. The story demands that we ask ourselves from time to time, have we created healthy boundaries? Or have we set some limit to the love that we might spread, to the difference that we might make? A limit that God would not set. Could we in Jackson spread love and make a difference in Riverton? Or God forbid, Manhattan or Los Angeles or any other place like that? Or are we defined and limited by the 22 that sits on the front and back bumpers of the vehicles we drive? Might we find forgiveness with one who has done the unforgivable? Are you, y'all, we, far more powerful than we imagine? Is it a limit that's holding us back? Is it fear? It's normal. Is it will? Together we have a lot of that. Do we need a little more faith? We can get that. The extension of God's love is boundaryless. It's universal. The work is hard. There is no doubt about that. We can do hard things. Right, Jade? We have. We are. We will. There are miracles in this story. But if this story is a story about miracles, it's a story about the future miracles that we will accomplish together when we abandon the limits we've set for ourselves and we hitch our wagons to God, who we know to be love. Amen.